So I think he's proving a lot of critics wrong at the moment, and especially with that. I mean, it's one of the best wins I've seen for a long time from any driver.
But the Ferrari apparatus, Fred Vasseur, and what they've done, they nailed it, the strategy.
Now we all know why McLaren fought so hard to get him from Alpine after a silly season a year ago.
You know, it is tough, and I'm going to be doing that this weekend, guys. So please do think of me. Poor Nate.
Send your
dad. You said it yourself. Katie George here, which means it's time to get unlapped. We'll break down all things Singapore, hit some news, and get you ready for Japan. And speaking of Japan, Lawrence Edmondson just touched down in Tokyo, which means we have a familiar face joining the show in replacement of Edmondson, Tyler Denning. So good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Hopefully Lawrence is pounding the pit pavement out there at Suzuka and getting all the info that we need, but I'm happy to be here with you guys.
I hope he's sleeping. And as always, we have Nate Saunders. It's lovely to see you always as well.
Thank you, Katie. Yep, Nate Saunders is still here. Our listeners are like, damn, the wrong one. Couldn't make it.
No one has ever said that, ever.
Well, so on Tyler's point, I can say Lawrence's Instagram is always worth a follow. He's a fantastic photographer when he's away from Formula One. And he's already having the best time of his life, kind of, you know, taking photos down there. And I've never been to Japan, but it looks incredible. It looks just like, you know, everyone who goes there says it's like a different world, you know, like just in a little kind of in a little place there. So, yeah, I'm very jealous of him being out there right now. Yeah,
I always wonder. I know exactly. Singapore and Japan are on my bucket list for Formula One races to be able to attend one day. And I always wonder how the two of you work out your schedules. Do you flip a coin? I mean, sometimes you guys double up and go to like home races that you're nearby, Silverstone being one. Sometimes the American races, you're both at. But like, how do you guys decide who goes where when it's just an individual?
That's a good question. I mean, a lot of the Lawrence still kind of, I guess, gets the pick. Otherwise, I'd be out in Japan right now. But for a lot of them, it makes sense for us to both be there, you know, from a cost perspective, logistics. You know, a lot of the European races, obviously Silverstone's a short drive for both of us. The US races being ESPN, we both go to. And then we'll discuss. So, like, I'm the only one going to Qatar in 2 weeks. Lawrence has taken some time off. I think deep down, if it was down to Lawrence, he'd go to every single one, regardless of whether I was there or not. But sometimes our bosses have to say to him, dude, you know, you need a bit of time at home. But yeah, it's obviously a fun battle that we have to be like, I want to go to this. No, it's me. You know, it's one of those good problems to have at work, I'd say.
Yeah.
Lawrence
that's
wants
you know.
To keep his flyer status, I'm sure. You know,
well, that's, yeah, well, that's it.
He's
as well.
Accumulating.
And I've noticed that the more I've traveled, the more your points go agonizingly close to the tiers you need. So suddenly you're like, actually, I totally get why people are precious about certain races. Cause this race basically determines whether you're, you know, in a lounge or not. So
that's how you know you have a good job, though, when you're
yes.
arguing over who gets to go where. You want to cover things.
who gets closer to lounge access this week? Yes. Is it me or you?
It's a good gig. All right. Remember, if you're watching us on YouTube, like this video, leave us a comment, and don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. It means a great deal to us here on Unlapped. All right, we're gonna dive right in. Singapore was awesome. Carlos Sainz, round of applause, my friend. He won his second race in F1 thanks to his performance on the weekend. He becomes just the 8th active driver to have multiple race wins. Nate, I think it was you on the last pod. You mentioned how impressive Sainz has been since the summer break. What did you think of his race weekend overall?
Best race of Carlos Sainz's career, quite comfortably, you know, and Monza. Yeah. Monza was really strong, you know, when he held off Charles, held off Max for a lot of that race as well. And you're right, yeah, he's and he even spoke about this change that he's had since the summer break. I think he said he and his mechanics and his engineers sat down and they said, right, I've got pace during a weekend. You know, I know I'm quick, but we saw so often with Sainz through weekends, especially earlier this year, he would look quick in practice. And then suddenly out of nowhere, Charles Leclerc, who's probably the best qualifier in Formula One, would just pull a lap out of somewhere, qualify ahead of Sainz, maybe by 1, 2, 3, or maybe even 4 positions. And that dictates your whole weekend from that point. You know, if you're the second car, you often end up on the second best strategy because the team says, well, optimum strategy goes to the guy in front. That's just the way it is. And Sainz, I've got to say, from the moment, you know, the session started in Singapore, he looked like he was on it. And, he qualified on pole, and I had my doubts because I wondered, you know, it's a difficult situation for Ferrari to be in. They've got Charles was, you know, the second Ferrari on the racetrack during the race. But Ferrari, fair play to them. They called it really well. Charles got really unlucky with on the pit stops, but Sainz did everything he had to do. And we can dig into this now, but one of the smartest wins I think I've seen for a very long time, just the way he backed Lando, you know, into the DRS, his own DRS zone. You know, he even had Ferrari saying to him, you do know he's still in DRS, right? He's like, yeah, it's on purpose. But I think it was a really interesting insight into Sainz's kind of his temperament, you know, the head that he's got on his shoulders is he's a really smart racing driver. Mm-hmm. And actually at Ferrari, I think we're starting to see you've got these two very, very different drivers. You've got Charles Leclerc, who's kind of the raw talent and maybe beats himself up quite a bit when he makes mistakes, maybe is in his own head quite a bit. With Sainz, I would say, you know, if you were to compare the two, probably isn't as naturally gifted as Charles, but we're seeing now that he's obviously worked out a way to race, worked out a way to drive consistently. And if he can carry this on, I mean, I think he's in great shape going into next year. Obviously, he doesn't have a contract like Charles beyond 2024. But yeah, superb race from him. And I've got to say, you know, I've not always spoken super, super glowingly about Sainz, especially earlier in the year. So I think he's proving a lot of critics wrong at the moment. And especially with that, I mean, that's one of the best wins I've seen for a long time from any driver. Really, really good.
I think consistency, Tyler, was the word that stuck out most. And also just, he not only physically did a great job, mentally, I thought he just was light years ahead of everybody else on that racetrack. Nate brings it up, Tyler, but what did you think of the end of the race and how things played out with the little car Lando that we got to see?
Smooth operator. Guys, you go on YouTube right now, and if you look at Sade Smooth Operator, all of the top comments now are about Carlos Sainz, but the immense pressure that he was under from the get-go, you know, he knew from the jump what would happen. And then as the race evolved, his racecraft to me is really what stuck out. And your point, Nate, about the raw speed that we've seen with Leclerc and Charles being so fast, but Sainz, he just doesn't seem to get rattled. And you look back to last year, years past, and some of those DNFs that he had or wrecks, even Suzuka last year, he you know, first lap, he doesn't finish. It didn't seem to be his fault. So there, the results didn't always seem to be on his end, but the results weren't there. But he has really settled into a groove. And Katie, to your question, it was amazing to mm-hmm. watch that and to see, you know, I can't think of another moment where there were two drivers that were on opposite teams, but were working together because the benefit, it was a zero sum. The benefit was for both of them.
Yeah.
For Lando to finish second because he knew, hey, this is my best chance to podium. And for Carlos out front, knowing, hey, I'm going to do this intentionally. And tip of the cap to Ferrari. I've been critical of Ferrari. Everybody's been critical of Ferrari. Absolutely. But the Ferrari apparatus, Fred Vasseur, and what they've done, they nailed it. The strategy at the start to put Charles on the softs to then back it up. And I think one of the biggest takeaways for me, guys, the point of this sport is to go fast. But Carlos went slow. He went slow and he drove to a delta. He drove to a time and it was perfectly executed. And it was great to see.
It really was. It was just smart driving top to bottom. So kudos to him. Kudos to Lando Norris, as we mentioned, was a part of that to ensure that Carlos got the win and that he got his fourth career second place finish. That's tied for second most runner-up finishes without a win in Formula One history. So we'll be waiting for Lando Norris to stand atop the podium.
Great stuff. Yep,
thanks to the SIG. Lewis Hamilton finished P3. Nate accurately called that as Lawrence Edmondson, and I did not. You vote against Lewis Hamilton, I have no idea. But what a devastating situation to finish P3 and watch your teammate just absolutely bend it at the end. We'll get into that. But the biggest storyline outside of Carlos Sainz's unbelievable race is the fact that Red Bull's streak has finally come to an end. Impressive 15 consecutive win streak finally over. Was it realistic, you guys, that they were going to be able to win every single race on the calendar?
Well, I started to think it was. So
I know, we're all leaning into it.
I didn't really fully believe over the summer, you know, until we got past the summer break and then we had Zandvoort and Monza. We saw Max come through those two races. I just thought, there's no beating this guy, you know. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I think people even started to seriously consider it, it's got away from them. But yeah, the you know, when you actually look at the probabilities, pretty unlikely.
You shook your head, Tyler.
one point, Nate, I saw a Patriots jersey in your background and your collection, and it brought me back to when the Patriots were seeking perfection. It's near impossible, especially in this sport, the amount of variables that have to go your way. And guys, I don't know about you, but if I hear the term flexible wing one more time and talk about that, it's going to drive me crazy. I mean, Red Bull, the streak and the run that they've had, Christian Horner saying it's unfathomable. Absolutely. And still you wonder if maybe a couple of things had adjusted and if Ocon, if that's a couple laps later for Red Bull, do they have a chance to win the race? I mean, Max had a little bit of pace, so yet and still they were there. But a remarkable run. I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again.
Quick clarification on the jersey. It was Patriots related. It was a Brady jersey, but it's Buccaneers.
Ah.
They've never been close to being undefeated. But Brady, you do associate him with it.
Okay, season, so. There you go. That's where I got the Pats reference, for some reason. It's Patriots, but it was Brady.
Yeah, yes, I think you just probably saw the Brady name. So, but no, it's a fair guess, mate.
Unbelievable run by Red Bull, as you both mentioned. Interesting note, though, McLaren's 1988 11 race win streak was also brought to an end by Ferrari. Heartbreakers they are. Now we'll just see if they can continue to roll with the momentum. Bit of news before we break into our preview of the Japan Grand Prix. Oscar Piastri has signed an extension with McLaren through 2026. Deservedly so. I mean, he has been by far and away the best rookie on the grid in the McLaren. Now we all know why McLaren fought so hard to get him from Alpine after a silly season a year ago. Nate, what do we know about this extension and the timing of it?
Yeah, the timing of it's quite curious because I don't think it was widely expected we were going to get this. You know, sometimes these things kind of come together quite quickly. But it is a very interesting deal because you're absolutely right. You know, McLaren, they know exactly what they've got in Oscar Piastri. You know, he is potentially a superstar in waiting. We've already seen glimpses of that. Obviously, second position at the sprint race at Spa, was fourth at Silverstone, probably should have been on the podium.
Yeah.
Was really unlucky not to be on the podium. And McLaren, every time you've spoken to anyone at McLaren this year, they've just said, this guy, you know, he is as good as we thought he was. And obviously with that, you hinted at it, you know, the famous tweet now. He went to court to get out of the Alpine deal. But the reason Zak Brown was willing to do that was because he knew how good Piastri was. But we knew he'd signed a multi-year deal. And everything we know is that it was to the end of next year, so the end of 2024. Really rare to see a contract extended like this, you know, before it's close to expiring, you know, before the current deal you're on is close to expiring. And it's two more years. And what's fascinating about that from a Formula One perspective is that, so Lando Norris's deal currently goes to 2025, which, as we've talked about before, is right on the cusp of the next rule change in 2026. So Lando is probably going to be able to bide his time a little bit, see where things are, see how McLaren look in 24, 25, if they're able to deliver a championship contending car in 25 with this current car that they're evolving. He'll probably think, well, you know, these guys might, under the new rules, you know, everything is in place now for them to challenge. But he's given himself that leeway. He's given himself, you know, a chance to say, oh, I can go to Red Bull, I can go to Mercedes, I can go to obviously the Audi team, which is now led by former McLaren team boss Andreas Seidel, who's a huge fan of Norris and a huge fan of Sainz, as it turns out. But what Piastri has done is he's basically taken himself out of all of that contention, and he's so committed to McLaren. His faith is so high in McLaren that he's committed to 2026. And it goes both ways. McLaren's faith in Piastri is so strong, they've extended him. So it's a really... It just shows you how close those two sides are together at this point. And for Piastri to have signed up for 1 year of that next rule cycle, it's a really brave call, I think, because the way these contracts work, it's very unlikely a lot of drivers are going to be on 1 year deals in 2026, I think. A lot of people will be signing deals with 26 and 27 in mind. So he could be in a situation where if McLaren isn't the quickest team in 26 and he suddenly thinks, I've got to get out of here, he might be able to at the end of that year, but his options might be limited because people might be on different deals. So that's a lot of hypothetical stuff for down the road. And that was what I first, you know, started thinking once I'd written the news report and once I'd done a little video hit for the site earlier, my mind started to think on the ramifications of it. But the easier news to digest is that McLaren love Piastri. Piastri loves McLaren. And at the moment, I would say I've always thought the Mercedes lineup is probably the best in terms of if I was looking at it and saying the one I would take, because you've got Lewis there, you've got George there, and you know both of the, obviously Lewis has won a lot of races, George has won one race. In terms of raw talent and excitement, it's got to be McLaren, you know, for the potential of those two guys. And they're together for the next 2 years at least now with Norris's deal, as I mentioned. So a bit of a surprising move in terms of the timing of it, but not surprising that McLaren are doing everything they can to keep Piastri down for as long as they can, because if he's as good as he's looked, then like Lando, you know, we're talking about a guy who should be able to challenge for championships in future, and you don't get drivers like that come along every day. So for McLaren to have two of those guys in their stable, it's pretty special, and they've got to be feeling pretty good about where things are at the moment.
Really quickly, remember when Lando signed his contract extension? It was for a lengthy period of time. How many years was that extension? Do you remember off the top of your head?
Yes. So that was, he signed that at the start of 2021 or two until 2025. So that was 3 years.
3 years.
So similar to what Piastri's done here. Okay. Obviously, he's done 24, 25, 26. So obviously, you know, if you're Zach Brown, this is becoming something that, you know, you're offering your drivers quite a lot. And it gives it, and stability works both ways. You know, for drivers always talk about how important it is knowing you've got long-term stability there, mm-hmm. especially when you're a young driver. You know, if you start making mistakes, it's like, well, look, instead of having a year and a half left on my deal, I've got 3.5 years left on my deal. Mm-hmm. It suddenly takes a lot of that pressure away.
Sure.
It means the way you work on things is a lot different. So it's a smart move from their, you know, from their perspective. But yeah, maybe that's the Zach Brown special, a 3 year deal. You're right though, Katie. I need to, as Tyler talks, I'm going to quickly check that out, because it's,
yeah.
I can't remember for the life of me what year that
was. I just wanted a little comparison just to see if it was a similar length, or maybe if McLaren and Tyler had gone to him and even offered him more years, but he settled on, you know, 2026 being long enough. You mentioned Carlos Sainz being a smooth operator. I think Oscar Piastri is a smooth operator for as young as he is. Like, the kid is so poised. He seems unflappable on track.
Well, and not only that, off the track, to go through the circus that he went through with the media and everything, and to lean into it as well. I don't know if you guys saw his social media earlier today, but he made reference to the infamous tweet and the situation about how he ended up. But Nate, to your point, I wonder as well how much of this is McLaren looking at Lando and saying maybe, maybe not. We don't know, because he has that option and we know we have something here. So we don't want to go into those new regulations cycles and have, you know, two in the bush, two in the hand, whatever it is, they would have none versus one. So that's interesting as well. But the kid is unflappable. So it's good to see in a sport that has a lot of instability, some stability.
And so, Katie, to go back to what you said, it was start of 2022. So it was exactly the same 3 year deal. And if you remember, we all kind of criticized that deal and questioned the logic of it at the time. I think the response to this one has been a bit different. I guess that's just because of different points of where they are in their career, but it also speaks to where McLaren is right now versus where they were in 2022, which
I think that's a fair point.
They've obviously made improvements, and now it seems like less of a risky move than it might have done when Lando signed that deal.
Yeah, where they are and the car that they're in is drastically different than when we were having that conversation a year ago. So that makes total sense.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Okay, Suzuka time, because it's an iconic track and weather always seems to be a factor. High-speed circuit, that is certainly challenging, but a favorite among the drivers. What type of racing can we expect? Does either one of you want to take this one? Because the next question is an easy one, let me tell you.
Have you guys looked at the weather forecast yet?
I haven't.
A little bit of rain. My hope
give it time.
Is, that we're not sitting for 2.5 hours like we did last year, waiting for the race to start, and then also going through the race with the uncertainty of what the outcome may or may not be. But Katie, Suzuka is it's a beautiful track to watch the drivers navigate the S's at the start as they go uphill. It has high speed. It has some of the most memorable corners. It looks great on TV. There's so much there. It's such an exciting weekend. I was telling you guys prior to the pod here, I'm a night owl, so it falls within a window. I love being able to watch that 1 a.m. race, 1 a.m. qualification. So I'm all in. I love it.
So this race is an interesting one from a UK perspective, because as you guys know, a lot of European fans, a lot of European fans who are on Twitter seem to complain at the moment that the US has three races.
We know that all the schedules geared around you Europeans and your timeline.
Exactly. This is one of the rare ones where, you know, I feel like I have more of an American fan experience because this one is an early start for us. And actually growing up, this used to be one of my favorite races because for all the reasons Tyler mentioned, Suzuka is an incredible, incredible circuit, but it was always 6 or 7 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And because it used to be the penultimate round, or it used to be at that end of the calendar, mm-hmm. there was usually something riding on it in terms of the championship. And I remember getting up when I was about 10 to watch Schumacher win in 2000. And it's just, it felt a lot more special, not just because of the early wake up, but as a kid, you kind of remember those a lot more. I think Suzuka, I'm so gutted that Suzuka is kind of this far up the calendar now. It makes sense, I guess, from a logistical point of view. But there was always so much riding on it before when it was towards the end. So that's my only criticism of it. And it's not really of Suzuka. It's more just of the scheduling. But it's an amazing place and definite bucket list circuit.
Are you saying there's nothing riding on this one?
Well, sorry. But Max can't win here, you know. So he can win the race. He can't win the championship here. Mathematically, and my point being, like, at this point we know Max is going to win it, right? Whereas
we do.
If it's penultimate race or final race, you know, it was, but then again we didn't always get total deciders, so I'm basing it on one memory of Schumacher rather than, you know, a yearly thing.
Welcome to the life of an American Formula One fan of having to set the alarm for 5:55 a.m.
I don't know,
so you
though.
Can make it out to the couch by 6
a.m. is pretty early. I mean, I know it's 1 a.m. in the U.S., give or take a few hours, but then 6, like at least ours are usually around 8 or 9 a.m. That gives you a little bit more time to snooze. 6 a.m.,
this one's tough. And because of the time of year now, the sun is barely up at that point. So, you know, it's easy to be up when the sun's up, isn't it? But when it's dark outside, you know, I'm not saying, Cry Me a River, everyone's here thinking this English guy can't deal with one or two early starts, but, you know, it is tough. And I'm going to be doing that this weekend, guys. So please do think of me, poor Nate.
Said it yourself. Okay, I can't believe I'm even asking this question, so just, you know, we'll just breeze straight through it. Tyler, can Max and Red Bull bounce back this weekend?
Yes, I fully expect them to. Absolutely.
Okay, perfect. We'll move on. Do we need to do we need to say anything else?
No.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward, but I think that that's what's fascinating about this last week is that a lot of people messaged me maybe who did watch the race or didn't and were suddenly like, so wait, a Red Bull not good anymore? And you had to say no, basically Lawrence would do a better job of explaining this, but Singapore, the ride height, they couldn't ride the car as aggressively as they usually do. Mm-hmm. That impacted the performance. And with Ferrari, Mercedes, etc. being a bit stronger, it balanced out in the way we saw. And I think going back to Suzuka, and you mentioned it earlier, Katie, or Tyler, one, I think maybe both of you did, that Max actually had some pretty good pace in the race. It's just, you know, he still came through to finish fifth. So that Red Bull, I think, is still a bit of a beast. But yeah, sorry, I ruined Tyler's snappy response. But just for anyone listening who wondered why, it was a pretty big anomaly. And I'd love us to be wrong. It'd be great because that was one of the best races of the year.
But to be fair, and as dominant as they've been, it's great for storylines, right? It's nice to have like a little mix up here and a bright spot for Ferrari to be able to hold on to, and just some kind of parity that can be track specific. And so Suzuka obviously presents its own kind of challenges, different than Singapore. As we look at Ferrari, do you guys feel like they could threaten to go back to back? They are slowly catching Mercedes for P2 in the Constructors' Championship.
Ferrari, I expect to be there. It seems like Mercedes has outside, take Red Bull out of the equation, because you know, you're on Twitter, you're on Reddit, you're on these forums. This is a phenomenal season if you take Red Bull out of the equation. But Mercedes has such a consistent car, it feels like, but their highs sometimes aren't as high as where Ferrari can hit. So it remains, you know, this, if Ferrari can build on their momentum, and that's always, it feels like a big if with Ferrari, consistency. Mercedes is consistent, Ferrari is wildly inconsistent, but they can have pace. So there's a chance. I mean, sure, it can and always happen, but I think the biggest question for Ferrari would be, if they're going to go back to back, who would it be? Would it be Leclerc that wins, or would it be Sainz that wins? Sainz is operating at, you know, and I'm sure I'd mentioned last year the disappointment he had in that race going out in the first lap. That was the third time, if you guys remember last year, that he had not made it to lap number two. That was probably the lowest point, I would say, for Sainz, maybe in his F1 career. So I think he's going to go into this weekend oozing with confidence. That's going to be great to watch within Ferrari. And did you guys see already with the garage setup that they forgot to put?
Yeah, one?
It was two Sainz garages. So that's got to be a great omen going into the weekend.
Been fixed. They have been remedied the mistake.
Imagine Charles Leclerc does have a spot. Seeing that, you're like, hang on a sec. I was the golden boy three races ago. Yeah. Now I don't even have a carriage.
Do you remember in Hard Knocks when the player went to badge in and he couldn't get into the team facility?
Is it Jets player?
That how Leclerc felt when he went and he showed up? And okay, so they've cloned Carlos and they're going to run two Carloses.
The rise and fall so quick. No, I'm just kidding. It's been remedied. Carlos Sainz has won, and Charles Leclerc was right next to him, so his face has been plastered, thankfully. But can't imagine that blunder when it was pointed out to whoever was putting the signage up, how embarrassed they probably felt.
How did it get up? Somebody had to say, where's your quality control to be like, those are the same guys.
Also, the fact that they have two is impressive.
Yeah. When you're working on it and it's right in front of you, I don't think you'd have seen the other one. So someone else passing needed to be the person to say, guys, we've got two scientists here. The guys putting up, I feel bad for, because they would have just had the, you know, whatever signs they were given.
I just saw what you, two scientists. I saw what you did there.
Well, maybe it's a sign. Definitely not intentional, but I'll take it. I'll take it if people want to think it. I'm that smart.
Okay. That's our signs to move on, Katie. Go ahead.
Nice.
Yeah, Tyler, before you get us off derailed for the rest of the pod, I'm going to get us back on track. And that is going to be with Mercedes. Obviously, you're happy that Lewis Hamilton, one of your cars, finishes P3. But by all accounts, we thought it was going to be George Russell on the podium. Do you feel like Mercedes can bounce back? George Russell in particular, Nate, after what was a really heartbreaking weekend for him.
Yeah, and I think the pressure will be on him, and you know, a lot of focus will be on him for that reason. He was really devastated by that. There was you know, the interview he did afterwards to Sky, he was choking back tears, you know, when he was talking, which we saw when he on a couple of occasions, you know, when he nearly won for Mercedes on his first race, when he got points for Williams. So George is a guy who he wears his emotions on his sleeve like that quite a lot, you know, and he, you know, he doesn't try and hide when he's upset. It'll be a really good test of his mental fortitude, I think, because, you know, that was it was such a tiny mistake, but it had such a big consequence. But it's easily the kind of thing you can overthink, and you can really, you know, just you can, it's like a thread, you know, when you've got a thread hanging out of your jumper, you can keep pulling at it. And he's lucky that we're almost going immediately back racing. You know, he hasn't got too much time to dwell on it. Sometimes I've heard drivers say the worst time you can make a mistake like that costs you a podium is before the summer break, because you have four weeks just to sit and think about it and ruminate on it. He's right back in the car on Friday for practice, and you'll think he'll be able to get that out of his head. But yeah, I think Mercedes will be good. I mean, they've been in pretty good shape all year in terms of that fight for second. They've not always been the second quickest team, but they've always been there or thereabouts. And I think what we're seeing from Mercedes is that, you know, those two guys are performing on such a good level. I would like to throw something out there just very quickly. Do you think the outcome of that race is different if Lewis, and I asked the same question after Leclerc and Sainz were fighting in Monza, would they have been allowed to if it was the other way around? This one, if Lewis was ahead of Russell at the end, And the fight was the same, do you think Lewis gets past? Do you think Lewis wins the race? Because I have a feeling, even if Mercedes don't want to admit it, do you want the guy there who's won 103 races, or do you want the guy there who's won one? I think it was experience just telling out, especially when they Russell nearly got past Norris. I think that Lewis may have got that move done. Mm-hmm. Obviously a hypothetical, but I just want to throw it out there, create some chaos before we move on.
No, I think that is one of the biggest things. So I want to know the team dynamic right now at Mercedes, because we all know how badly Lewis Hamilton wants to win again, wants to win another race. And he has to be sitting there saying, that was me. I make that pass on Lando, and then I'm able to go get Carlos and win the race and be back on the top of the podium. So I think it's interesting. I think it bears mentioning, you know, how does Mercedes deal with that dynamic? I saw Toto's not going to be in Japan for the race this weekend, but Lewis has to be. There's that impatience. He wants to win. He's a champion.
Yeah.
So there's got to be something going on there.
And I think, to Lewis's credit as well, I was actually quite surprised, because he's not, we don't always hear from Lewis him saying, you know, he'll admit when he's made, you know, he's maybe not raced as well as he could. But on Sunday, he said, if I'd been on pole, I could have won the race. So he said, I've just got to improve on Saturdays, which is remarkable for a few reasons. One, he's one of the best qualifiers we've ever seen. But also, it was kind of a soft admission that had he qualified better, he could have been ahead of Russell at the end, and then he could have challenged for the win. At no point did he say, the team should have let me past. I think he knew the reason George was ahead of me was because up until that moment, George had done the better job. And that, to Tyler's point, is where that dynamic's interesting, because Russell has really, since the start of last season, really has moved his level up so much higher than we thought he would, or at least, you know, quickly. He's done it so quickly, quicker than we thought he would. But yeah, Lewis winning a race would still be, I think, on most people's like bucket list of things they want to see one more time. Mm-hmm. Lewis winning a race, I think, it's just because of how Abu Dhabi went in 2021. And yeah, it would have been pretty amazing if he'd come through and won it there, but not to take anything away from Sainz, because fully deserved.
I will say, though, I thought he played it pretty calmly when he was behind Russell. I mean, there was one radio message where he said, George needs to pick up the pace. Obviously, Lewis's tires were in a better situation than George's were. But where my mind went was George just knowing he was back there and he was closing in. And you know that George knows, as a 7-time world champion, he's going to be, even if he can't hear the radio messages and has no idea what Lewis is saying to his race engineer, that he's going to be gunning to want to pass. And so I think the added pressure of knowing I've got to try to overtake Lando, but then I've also got my own teammate who I'm holding up, I think that pressure kind of weighs on your mentality a little bit. Who knows if that then ended up in a slight mistake that puts you in the wall, and then ultimately your day is done. I thought that could have been a factor.
Confidence is a fickle thing as well. Confidence, you know, it's a fine line, and it'll be interesting to watch Russell. And like you said, Nate, how gutted he was, and knowing what he left on the table, how he bounces back from that.
I think it's helpful, though, that he's racing again in, what, 6 days? You know, he's back on track immediately. I think sometimes when you make a mistake like that, have a devastating weekend, and then you go on break, or there's a 2-week gap between, you know, continents, I think that can, like, weigh on your mind a little bit more. So for him to be able to get back in the car, I think will hopefully be a big deal for George.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armorall, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armorall products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at Armorall.com. Armorall, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
All right, AlphaTauri. Yuki Tsunoda at his home race, obviously very exciting, looking to make a statement at AlphaTauri, because we are hearing maybe that they're going to offer him an extension. We're not entirely sure yet, Nate. Where do we stand with Yuki's deal?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I don't think Red Bull have made up their minds yet about.
Okay, so we're still in the unknown territory. Year.
I think I would be very surprised, and we've talked about this before, but I'd be very surprised if Ricciardo isn't in the seat next year, in one of those two seats, for a lot of reasons. You know, he's come back, he's performing well. We mentioned, you know, his marketing kind of prowess. Red Bull are trying to sell that team. They're going to have a new brand coming in and kind of running the team. So having Ricciardo there is manna from heaven for whoever you are. You've basically walked into F1 and you've got the most marketable driver there next to you. But I think the other seat is between Tsunoda and Lawson. What I will say is I think Tsunoda is probably the favorite of the two. Largely, well, not largely, but for you know, significant reason being that Red Bull, their engine partner, is still Honda. Obviously, and this is what a lot of the reports have been saying this weekend, that Tsunoda is going to get a deal at the Japanese Grand Prix. I'm not completely ruling it out. We could get that by the end of the week. But I think that there's still internally a lot of dialogue about how well Lawson's done. And I think that it's interesting as well because, you know, in Lawson, you've basically got exactly what the Red Bull program was designed for. It was, you've got a young driver, he's come in, he's performed well. I've always got the impression that Christian Horner doesn't think Tsunoda's ever going to race at Red Bull. I think he just thinks, look, don't think the guy's got it in terms of, you know, his mental temperament. He has been better this year, performance-wise, but I just, you don't get the sense that Red Bull feel like he's the next guy to replace Perez. You'd back Ricciardo over Tsunoda at this point. And if that's the case, what's the point keeping him is sometimes how you feel, right? So I think Tsunoda still has it based on experience, based on Honda, based on a few other things. But it's really unlucky for Lawson because he's done nothing wrong at all and really deserves that opportunity. And actually, I would say it's a compliment to him that he's complicated it as much as he has.
That's fair.
Because until he came in, it really looked pretty cut and dry. You know, it was, okay, Ricciardo will get it. Tsunoda will stay in for another year. Lawson stays as reserve. Everyone headache-free for the rest of, you know, for the end of the year. Lawson has completely complicated that situation, and he's done that because of how good he's been.
P9 gets points in Singapore. That is Liam Lawson, who's been very, very impressive, as you just mentioned. Tyler, I'm putting the cap on your head.
Okay.
Does Liam Lawson deserve a seat at Williams enough to oust a Logan Sargeant?
I think Liam Lawson should get the seat at AlphaTauri.
Okay.
Well. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Sargeant really hasn't shown anything to warrant why you would
but
say.
But Williams aside, you think he deserves an AlphaTauri seat?
Absolutely. Why not? You know, Nate, to your point, if the Red Bull Junior program, especially the state that it's in, as they've tried to shore it up and get sharper, if your idea is to develop young drivers to eventually put them into a Red Bull seat, why would you not? Nick DeVries, you know, the question was, hey, here's a driver that we've seen with talent. You put him in the AlphaTauri, did not deliver. So then you made a change. You went back to the known commodity in Daniel Ricciardo. I think at this point, if you want to develop, I am all about any industry, develop your young talent. Opportunity, you can't do it sitting on the sideline with Ricciardo. It was very unfortunate. So to me, it should be Lawson. And then the question is between Ricciardo and Tsunoda. And Nate, I think you made great points about having Daniel Ricciardo around your team and what that brings, both from a driving perspective and then off the track as well. So I think Lawson should be the sure thing for AlphaTauri.
Yeah, and this is where, and I don't envy Red Bull really having to make the decision because I can totally see the longevity argument with Tsunoda. You know, you've got that. You want AlphaTauri next year to be more competitive. Tsunoda knows his way around the team a lot better. You know, you keep him in. I think Tsunoda's good enough to stay in F1 as well. I think that complicates it because there's a very big difference, isn't there, between is he good enough for Formula One and is he good enough to drive at Red Bull? Does he have the mental fortitude to drive alongside Max Verstappen? And I think there's different answers to both those questions. I think one is yes, he is good enough to be in F1. I don't think Red Bull would ever think he's, you know, you see how Perez has struggled, and Perez is mentally, we always thought, one of the strongest drivers around. Yuki, you know, everything you hear from him, you know, he's not a strong part of his you know, kind of his game. And it is just three races, but from what we've seen from Lawson would suggest that he, you know, he's on a much more even keel when it comes to his temperament. Who knows? You know, that might change. We might see him have a big accident this weekend. You know, everyone's fickle. Suddenly they say, actually, this Lawson guy's rubbish. But right now, what we have is that, you know, it looks like Red Bull have kind of unearthed a bit of a gem in Liam Lawson, which maybe, and I think he surprised them as much as he surprised people watching, because if they knew he was this good, I think he'd been in the car already.
What's the word? Oh, sorry. I was just thinking, what's the word on a Ricciardo return? Do you know, Nate? What is it looking
like?
Yeah,
I think so. It's not going to be this weekend. Lawson's still in the car. They want it to be Qatar, which is obviously 2 weeks away. But I think it could be Austin, because I think with what I've said, and again, I would say I'm about 90% sure Ricciardo has one of those two seats. So if that is the case, there's no rush from Red Bull to go back. There's also no rush from him to go back. knowing he's got it. I think if that situation was different, I think we could have seen him rushing back for these two races. But Qatar, from everything I've heard, is Qatar is there's a good chance he gets back for there. He'll definitely be back in time for Austin. It's just how quickly things heal up, I think.
All I was going to say is it took one good result from Nick DeVries to get a seat. We've seen now three pretty good ones from Liam Lawson. I would hate to think that he doesn't get a seat after performing this well. But I'm sorry if I just threw a stray bullet to Logan Sargeant at Williams, but we shall see. Okay.
No, but I think it's fair. I think it was a fair bullet because, you know, Sargeant's he's been given a great. Yeah. So not that there's many of those ever, but in this context, it was a fair one. Sargeant's been given a car that's competitive, you know, and not as competitive as some, but Albon has shown what you can do with that car and he's not delivered. So fire away, Katie. I think it's more than fair.
We're only here for fair bullets. Okay.
Yeah. I might have to think of a new way to word that going
that's
forward.
So good. Fair bullets might okay. Not. Last thought quickly before we get to predictions, Aston Martin, how badly do they need to have a good weekend going into Japan?
Very. And well, I think this is a whole other episode. We'll see how Stroll does this weekend. But Stroll, I think, is just in so much. He's really in trouble there at the moment. You know, there's the confidence. We're talking about confidence and all this earlier. Mm-hmm. I think at Aston Martin right now, you have two drivers who are at completely different ends of the spectrum. Obviously, they had a terrible result in Singapore. Season's kind of falling away from them a bit compared to where they were. But out of those two drivers, the big story is Lance had that big crash. Thankfully, walked away from it. You know, he was just a bit banged up. He wasn't injured badly. But I think confidence is really low. So he needs a big result. I'd say more than the team, if anything, because the big question around the team is what, you know, the nepotism question. If Lance can't turn this around, the big question gets bigger and bigger. And that is, what is Lawrence Stroll going to do about the fact that his son is kind of, you know, he's kind of stinking the joint out a bit at the moment because he's not performing well. He's crashing a lot. And in the other car, you've got a guy who is delivering really good results on a regular basis. So absolutely needs a strong weekend. I don't think Alonso really ever needs one. He's always got one in his back pocket, but Stroll definitely does. And I think Aston, if you think about what we've been talking about the last few podcasts, we've talked about obviously Red Bull, how great McLaren are. We talked about Ferrari. We haven't talked about Aston in that light for a while. So yeah, they need kind of an injection of some good feeling again in their season.
McLaren is hot on their heels, I think, for Aston Martin. If they were to walk away from this season and McLaren were to jump over them and finish in fourth, it would be a failure of a season given the improvement.
Based on how they started the season.
Right. You know, that they haven't.
What a fall.
That's what it is that it's, you know, it was a high and they definitely exceeded expectations at that first, you know, juncture. But since then, it hasn't been any progress and teams, you know, tend to progress, but they have cliffed. And part of that is that you're not getting, you know, you're not getting, you have one driver that's pulling the weight a lot more than the other driver. And Nate, I think that's a very interesting, you know, storyline for Aston Martin. That's the biggest question, I think, for that team is that does Elder Stroll make a decision to make the team more competitive, or do they, you know, continue to wait around and see if they get the performance that they need from Lance?
Yeah, it's and I'm not sure we'll ever see it. You know, it's a difficult decision. You know, family, business, you know, those two things. There's a reason those two things should never really mix. If you look at the standings this year, just to your point, sorry, Katie, I know I'm delaying our favorite bit of the pod.
I said quick, and you two are just taking your time.
Sorry, we think we've got 2 hours here. We don't. We've got the usual amount of time. But so Lance Stroll has 47 points. Fernando Alonso's got 170 points. So even if Stroll, we're not saying Stroll has the same amount of points for the year as Fernando. Even if he had 60 more points, even if he was on 100, that gap you mentioned, Tyler, is a lot bigger. You know, right now, you're right. McLaren is still, you know, they're far away, but it's within reason that they could really drop off. They're also only 40 points behind Ferrari. So with a few more Stroll points, they're right in that fight, but they've completely dropped off that fight for third, you know, seconds a bit further up the field. But it shows you how big one driver being out of form these days is.
At some point for Lawrence Stroll, you have to make a head decision, not a heart decision. And at what point do you decide that you are holding the team back, the entirety of the organization, because you continue to ride with your son? Now, at a certain point, he might think that he warrants and is deserving of that seat, but you just laid out the point scenario, and I think we can all, you know, deduce. You know who else needs a really big weekend? This girl, okay? Because I'm falling behind. It is prediction time. And I texted Lawrence Edmondson to get his predictions. He did not respond. I don't know if that's because he's like 19 hours ahead of me. He might be sleeping, yeah. He might be walking the streets of Japan. Who knows? But because of that, I'm making an executive decision as host of Unlapped. Tyler, and this could backfire on us, Nate. Tyler, I'm going to allow you to pick for Lawrence this week because he currently leads the standings with 37 points. Ooh. Nate's 2 points behind at 35, and I am trailing by a lot now at 29 points. So, Tyler, welcome to the show. I know you've been before, but you've never done predictions. You are going first. I need your first, second, and third pick.
First, Max.
Okay.
Second, Lewis. Third, Sainz.
Nice.
That is one different than what I was going to do. And now I'm like, by the way, Lawrence talked me out of Ferrari last week.
He did.
I am no longer listening to him anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's doing it as a mind game so that he can continue to.
Yeah. You got to watch out for him. He's a wily old fox.
Wily fox. Okay. I'm going to go Max Lewis because I left him out last week and it burned me. And then I'm going to go with Lando instead of Carlos Sainz. But you. No, I'm riding with it. I'm going to stick to it. I'm going to stick to my guns. Nathaniel?
So I'm going to be really boring. I'm going to go Max, Checo, and then Sainz. I think Sainz, you know, we've talked him up on this pod.
Wow.
In the form of his life right now. I want to see it continue. But I think Red Bull's just going to be back to what we saw pre-Singapore.
Do we approve of you're like with me? So when Lawrence bitches next week and he's like, whoa, 100%. I just needed to. Okay, you're good with this?
Unless Tyler's predicted all three correctly. And then
unless I, no, if I nail the
trifecta,
the whole prediction right. thing is dead.
Yeah.
Actually, we'll just give Tyler an asterisk that he was perfect for the season. And then we'll say that Laz was disqualified so that he gets 0 points.
Let's do that. I'll be way ahead.
He won't know any of this has happened because there's no way he goes back and listens to this podcast that he's missed because he's busy working.
Yeah, if you want to throw strays, if I come in and score points, that's more than Sargent. So, you know, I'm right there.
Well,
now there's some strays. Those are some strays, right?
Is it a stray bullet or is it a fair bullet? We'll let you guys decide.
Yeah.
Tyler, so good to see you. We appreciate your time. Nate, as always, a pleasure. Enjoy watching at 6 a.m., 1 a.m. I think I'm maybe 11 p.m. on the West Coast. So, wherever, whatever time you are able to watch, enjoy the race. We'll be back on Unlapped next week. Cheers, guys.